I want to direct the lesson this morning primarily to our teenage boys. Those of you who are in your teens, those of you who are perhaps 17 or beyond, I want to talk to you, especially you, and take this opportunity while most of our congregation is absent. Secondarily, I want to speak to those of you girls of the same age. And then, ultimately, I want all of us, young and old, to take the lesson today and apply it to our lives, and perhaps we can be better people. We've been studying recently in the Old Testament. I don't often spend this much time in the Old Testament, but you get back in there and find these great noble characters. It's hard to get away from them. And the graphic descriptions that are given of the lives of these men and women, and the fact that they are written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope, causes us to keep dipping back into those ancient histories and gleaning from them the rich lessons that make our lives meaningful. I want to talk to you, young men, this morning and tell you about a man who refused to be buried. The man's name is, and I'll have to read it, Zaphnath-Paneah. Zaphnath-Paneah. And if you will, go back with me to about the 18th century B.C., to the country of Egypt, to the royal palace of one of the rulers of Egypt. This man, Zaphnath-Paneah, is on his deathbed. And the record says that as he lay there, that he was 110 years old. And we find, as we go into his bedchamber, we find a whole group of men gathered around this Zaphnath-Paneah. And we find them placing their hand upon his thigh and making him a promise. And we are fascinated by such an intriguing and unusual ceremony. And after they are finished, we call one of the men aside and say, What were you doing? And he tells us, we were making an oath to our brother. He was asking us to swear, to make a solemn oath to him that we would not bury his bones here in Egypt, but that we would take him out of Egypt and bury him as we came into the land of Canaan. Now, the Zaphnath-Paneah to whom I refer is simply the young man Joseph. And it was he that entered the service of Pharaoh in the land of Egypt when he was 30 years old, carried there when he was 17 as a slave, entered the royal service at 30, at which time he was given this name by Pharaoh, Zaphnath-Paneah. And this man, Zaphnath-Paneah, was making his brothers swear an oath to him that they would not bury him in Egypt, but that they would take him up out of Egypt and carry his bones with them and bring him into the land of Canaan and bury him. Now this man, you might call him the man that refused to be buried. He was a very unusual person. The ceremony that we just observed was a very unusual ceremony. This practice of taking the hand of the person that you were making take this oath and placing it upon your thigh, that was an unusual ceremony in our time. We don't do like that. But it was very commonplace among the Hebrew people. We find Abraham making his servant swear to him the same way. We find Jacob, Joseph's father, making him swear of a matter in the same way. And now, though it's not specifically stated in the text in Genesis, the 50th chapter, that Joseph made that same gesture, it's reasonable to assume it was customary. And in some Arab nations today, they still make you put your hand upon their thigh as they make you take an oath. So we find this very unusual ceremony taking place. But not only was the ceremony unusual, young men, the thing that he made them promise was unusual. The request that he made on his deathbed was unusual. He didn't want to be buried. In fact, he just said, "Swear to me that you'll not let me be buried here in Egypt. Swear to me that you'll take me out of here and not bury me here, that you'll bury me in the land of Canaan." And so the request was very unusual. And I want to tell you this morning, briefly and I hope colorfully and meaningfully, of this young man who was so mindful of his future that he would not be buried in the land of Egypt. Joseph was a man that refused to be buried even while he was alive. And you young folks may think, well, is that unusual? Doesn't everybody refuse to be buried while he's alive? No, not at all. A lot of young men and women are buried while they're alive. It's sad. I don't mean a physical burial. I don't mean that someone puts them in a grave and covers them up, but they become covered up with external circumstances over which they perhaps have no control. They find themselves burdened down with events. They find themselves being really buried by things perhaps that other people have done to them, but not Joseph. Joseph was not going to be a man that they would bury while he was alive. They tried. Look at some of these things. Joseph refused to let his father bury him. You know, Joseph's father was a human being, and he made mistakes. One of the mistakes that he made was that he made Joseph his little pet. Joseph was the son of his old age, we're told in Genesis, the 37th chapter. And because Joseph was the son of his father in his father's old age, Joseph's daddy was partial to him. And preferential treatment given to Joseph by his father, Jacob, that possibly could have spoiled the boy, didn't. Joseph was not going to let it overwhelm him. He was not going to let it overpower him. The Bible says that Joseph was loved by his father more than his father loved any of his other brothers. And so many young people have been spoiled like that, that they've grown up thinking that the world owes them a living. They get this treatment from their mother and daddy, and they think that everybody else ought to treat them the same way. I wonder if there are any of you young people here today that have been spoiled rotten. If your mom and daddy haven't done it, your grandmother and granddaddy surely have if they live near you. And you've grown up thinking that the world owes you a living, and people have to just tiptoe, you know, around you like they're walking on eggs in order not to arouse your wrath. I wonder how many people like that have grown up thinking that the world owed them a living and that everybody had to cater to their wants. Well, we don't find that happening to Joseph. Oh, it affected him, I think, temporarily. We find one record here where he was a tattletale. Joseph was a tattletale. It says he was out keeping his brother's sheep with him one day, and his brothers weren't doing like they ought to, so it says that Joseph brought an evil report to his father about his brothers. Well, they didn't like that. In fact, they didn't like much about Joseph anyway. But other than that, there's not much evidence that anything really serious was a permanent effect upon this young man as to how his father treated him. He loved him, yes, but he preferred him over his other brothers, and that wasn't good. And it was a burden that could have buried Joseph, but it didn't. But another thing that didn't bury him, he wouldn't allow it to bury him, and that was the treatment of his brothers, the prejudiced, hateful, cruel treatment that his brothers put upon him. Joseph's brothers hated him because his father loved him more than he loved them. And it says that it even affected the way they talked to him, that they couldn't even talk peaceably to him. It just affected them. It was such a thing of such a thorn that it said when the brothers saw that Jacob loved Joseph more than he loved them, that it was that they hated him, and they couldn't even talk peaceably to him. And this could have made Joseph just be crushed Later on, it says they were down taking care of the sheep, and Joseph came to bring a message from their father. And he came and found his brothers, and they were at Dothan, and he found his brothers there out in the fields. And the brother said, "There comes that dreamer. Let's kill him, and then we'll see what becomes of his dreams." That was the kind of attitude that his brothers had to him. Do you know what it means to be frozen out? Do you know what it means to experience these attitudes of other people that just simply say, "We hate you, we don't really like you"? Joseph had that experience, and his brothers could have crushed him. As here he was, a teenage boy, 17 years old, and here he was, having been raised in the sunshine of his father's favor, and yet at the same time, he was excluded by his brothers. They wouldn't have anything to do with him. They hated him, and they were trying now to kill him. They put him into a pit. Reuben was going to come back and get him, but he wasn't allowed to because they sold him as a slave. There's a picture that I've seen, and it shows Joseph upon the back of a camel, looking back at his brothers, and there they are counting the money. And he's looking back on his brothers, and I've thought there was such a picture of heartbreak on that boy's face. And yet it wasn't a lasting thing. It didn't let him be soured. It didn't let him turn his back upon his family. But a third thing, when he got down into Egypt, something else could have buried him. The injustice that he experienced at the hand of Potiphar's wife and of Potiphar himself. When he got to Potiphar's house, or when he got to Egypt, he was bought by Potiphar and made a slave in Potiphar's house. And he did real well. He worked hard. He did every job that he was told to do, and he did a very good job at it. And everything that Potiphar had began to prosper because of the good job that this young man was doing. There's a lesson there for you young people. You may not find yourselves in just exactly the situation that you may prefer. You might really prefer being somewhere else and doing something else. But are you able to adjust and to be the kind of person that you ought to be anyway? Maybe you don't like to do dishes. Perhaps it just really galls you to go out and get firewood. How are you going to react? Well, are you going to let it bury you? Are you going to let it make you a sourpuss and someone who's soured on life, you know, and you can't stand where you are? Joseph wasn't like that. Here he was now, a slave in Egypt, betrayed by his brothers. Now he was in a position, and yet he did the very best job that he could do with it. And in doing all this that was so good, here came this woman who was a hypocrite. She was ruled by her passions, and she tried to get Joseph to commit adultery with her. Joseph was a very good-looking boy. It says he was handsome and he was good-looking. And she cast her eyes upon him and said, "Lie with me." Joseph said, "I'm not going to do it. How can I do this evil thing and sin against God?" But not only did it say he refused to lie with her, it said he refused to be in her presence. He would not be even one who would even countenance such a thing. He was not going to be even allowing temptation the back door. He wasn't going to be found where temptation was. Joseph said, "I will not lie with you, and I'm not even going to be in your presence. I won't be around you." And that's a good lesson for you too. When temptation comes knocking at your door, too many times we flirt with it to the point that we come around, you know, and we say, "Well, I'm not going to do wrong, but it doesn't hurt me just to be around it. I'm not going to be doing anything wrong. If you're going to do something wrong, it'll be you, but I'll go with you." Joseph said, "I'm not even going to go with you. I'm not going to commit a sin with you, and I'm not even going to be around you." And he wouldn't. But then she forced herself upon him. He fled, left his garment. She brought a false report to her husband. Her husband then, after he came from the field, called Joseph in to him, punished him, put him into prison. All of this because he was doing what was right. And you know, it could have soured him. It could have soured him so against the establishment that he would say, "Well, what difference does it make whether you do right or wrong? You get kicked in the teeth anyway. What difference does it make? Here I've done the very best I know how. I've kept myself pure. I've done the very best work for this man that I knew how to do. And yet here he has done me an injustice. And here I sit in a filthy, damp, rotten prison, rotting away for having done what was right." But Joseph didn't say that. When Joseph got put into prison, the next record that we have of it was that he was doing just as good a job there as he had done when he was in the house of Potiphar. He just wasn't the kind of a boy that was going to be overpowered or buried by external circumstances. And then a fourth thing that could have overwhelmed him and buried him was the fact that somebody treated him nice. And you think, well, boy, that's a change for this boy. And it was. He was brought up out of the prison, out of the dungeon, it says. And Pharaoh elevated this young boy to such a position of power and prominence and riches that if you're not careful, you're going to see this boy fail, and you're going to see this boy be overwhelmed by things that he could not be touched by before. This young man here, however, did not succumb. He wouldn't let these things bury him. And you know, sometimes power and riches and prominence and popularity, sometimes these things can get to a young man or to a young girl and do things to them that poverty and adversity can't do. Some of you can stand poverty and adversity, but you can't stand riches and prosperity. Some of you can stand disfavor and you can't stand favor. Some of you would have let down your barriers and, you know, and would have been overwhelmed. You would become a snob. You would have become someone overpowered by power and over-enarmored by the favor that Pharaoh showed. Pharaoh said, I'm putting my whole house under you. He said, there won't be a man in this whole country who can lift a hand or foot without your consent. And he says, I'm putting you over all the land of Egypt. What would that have done to you? Would it have spoiled you? This young man was a man that refused to be buried while he was alive. He wasn't going to let these things bury him. Either the favor that his father showed him, which was wrong, really, it was dangerous. It could have made a spoiled brat out of him. Or the betrayal of his brothers, he could have soured on it. Or the injustice by Potiphar and Mrs. Potiphar, it could have ruined him. He could have been disgruntled and crushed the rest of his life. Or the favor that Pharaoh showed him, that could have crushed him too, but he didn't let it. He wouldn't let these things bury him. But he was another kind of a person. Not only would he not allow himself to be buried while he was alive, he wouldn't allow himself to be buried even after he was dead. Now that's what's so funny about it. We look at these other things and we think that's amazing, and we stand back in awe of such a young man, 17 years old now, and yet he had enough about him that he was not going to let these things bury him. Now that he's 110 years old, he's still not going to let himself be buried. He said, don't you bury me down here. He said, don't you let my bones be rest here. I want to be carried out of here when you go. And so he was a young man that wouldn't allow himself to be buried even after he was dead. We look at him, and as I look at him, and I wonder what it was that these people thought of as they saw this coffin. You know, his bones were put in a coffin. He was embalmed for 40 days, and his bones were put in a coffin. And this coffin, perhaps, was in full view of the children of Israel. I don't know where they kept him. It doesn't say. But it says that he was in a coffin. They didn't put him in a tomb for a permanent length of time, at least. I wonder what it was that the people remembered Joseph for. Well, he was good looking. I suppose they might have remembered that, but at 110 years old, you reckon he was very good looking? 110? He was awfully wrinkled if he was 110, I imagine. And I doubt that that's what they remembered him for. But I'll bet you they did remember him for this. He was a young man who would not forget certain things. Oh, he forgot some things. He forgot the injustices, and he forgot the things that people did against him that were bad. He forgot all the things in life, really, that he should have forgotten, but he was a man that remembered the things that he should remember. Listen to these things that he remembered. He remembered his father's house. He remembered his family. He didn't forget his own daddy. You know, a lot of times boys forget their daddies. They forget what their daddies have done for them. Joseph didn't know his mother very well. She died when he was young. And she died when, he was just a lad, perhaps 6 or 8, 10 years old. And he doesn't say much about her because by this time that the record takes up, it had been a long time, and his father was still living, though, and he remembered his father. He just never did forget his daddy. I was home this past week for Thanksgiving vacation, and my father and I sat and talked, and we would lie on the bed together and talk. He'd sit in his old chair or sit up on the bed, and I'd lie there and talk to him, and I told him, I said, Daddy, all the things you've ever taught me have always placed me in good stand. And they've now placed my sons and daughters in good standing. And I thank you for it. And it touched my heart to be able to lie there with this old patriarch of my own, my father, and say to him, all the things that you ever taught me have put me in good standing. Joseph was a man that didn't forget his father. You remember when he tricked them, but the boys came down, his brothers, wanting something to eat, and he was willing to give them something, of course, and he asked them, "Do you have a father? Is he alive?" And they said, "Yes, he's alive." And then the second trip they came to Egypt, during that trip, he asked them this question. He said, "What about the old man that I asked you about? What about your father? Is he still alive? Is he well?" He was interested in his daddy. And when he came down into the land of Goshen, when Jacob and his whole 75 strong family came into Goshen, it says that Joseph prepared his chariot, got his horses all hooked up, and got everything ready, and he went out to meet his daddy, and he fell on his neck, and he kissed him, and he fell there and just wept and cried because he was so glad to see his daddy. Did you ever kiss your daddy? You boys ever kiss your father and tell him you love him? Don't you know that was a tender meeting when those boys, when they all gathered around, and here was Joseph and here was his father, and as they fell upon each other's neck and they kissed each other and they wept, don't you know that was a tender meeting? Well, he loved him. He'd done a lot for him, and he never did forget it. Not only that, but it says Joseph got them settled in the land of Goshen. That means simply he took off work. He asked Pharaoh, probably said, "I need some time off to get my father and my brothers and all their children settled." And just as he had done on other occasions, later occasions, he let this boy get off from work to go take care of his family and his brothers. He never forgot them. He never forgot his brothers after his father died. They thought he would. They thought after his father died. In fact, they got together and said, "Now he's going to get even with us. And he's going to get us back for all the evil we've done." So they sent a message and said, "Now our father said before he died, you forgive these boys of the sin they committed against you." And it says Joseph cried. Joseph wept when he got the message. And he called them and he said, "Don't be afraid." He says, "Am I God?" He said, "As for you, you meant evil, but God meant it for good so that I could preserve life just like it's been preserved. Look," he said, "this is why I was sent down before you." He didn't forget his brothers, even after his father was dead. He didn't forget something else either. Joseph didn't forget his childhood dreams. Joseph had some pretty rank dreams. He dreamed one day that his sheaf was standing in the field and all of his brothers' sheaves were bowing down to his sheaf. And he also dreamed a dream of a star and of the sun and the moon and the other 11 stars gathered about bowing down to his star. Some pretty highfalutin dreams, and it made his brothers mad. They didn't like those dreams. But Joseph never forgot them, and every last one of those dreams that he dreamed came true. You can read about it and find them bowing down before him. On this occasion, after his father's death, the brothers came after Joseph had wept. They came and bowed down before him and said, "We're your servants." But that's not really what was important. The important thing about Joseph not forgetting his childhood dreams is simply this. Joseph kept himself pure. Joseph kept himself ready. Joseph kept himself for what God had prepared for him to do. He didn't know what it was. And at times he could not see the connection between where he was and what the dreams were. There he was sitting in the bottom of a dungeon. And he couldn't figure out maybe what's the connection, but he never forgot the dreams. And he kept himself so that God could use him, regardless of where it was. Joseph never forgot those childhood dreams. Then there's a third or fourth thing that he never forgot, and that is he never forgot his God. And of course, this one overshadows all the rest of them. Joseph never forgot his God. This was the secret of his life. Whether it was in the temptation with Potiphar's wife, you know what he said to Potiphar's wife? He rebuked that poor woman by saying this, "How can I do this sinful thing and sin against God?" Not sin against you or sin against me or sin against your husband. He said, "Your husband's given me everything in the house but you, and he's only kept you back because you're his wife." But when he got down to the wrong and right of the matter, it was improper to betray her husband. But he said, "It's a sin, and I can't sin against God." And that's what kept this young boy pure as he was. He had a prior claim on his life. He knew that God had the right to command his life. And because of that constant awareness of God, this young boy was kept in the hour of temptation. When he was in prison, the same awareness of God kept him there. He knew God existed, and he knew God had plans for his life. And consequently, here again is this same thing cropping out in Joseph's life that we see cropping out in the lives of those other great people, Joshua, and Rahab the harlot, these people, they were aware of God's presence. You remember how we studied his presence in their lives? He was aware of it. So was Joseph. And then when it came to his explaining all the evil that had happened to him, he explained it in the same way. He said, "You meant it for evil. You meant to do me evil," he told his brothers, "the way you sold me down here, you know, and put me in as a slave. He said, "You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good. He did it for good. And this was God's doing. He used you, that's all right, but he said, God did it for good, and I don't hold it against you." But Joseph never forgot his God in the explanation of all the evil and of his whole life. God was the key figure in all of it. Then he never forgot the promise that God gave to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. You remember way back before Joseph was a boy, before he was born, God had made a promise to some other men who were great men. He made a promise to Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And then in the 50th chapter of this great book of Genesis, as Joseph was lying there on his deathbed, Joseph makes reference to it. Joseph said to his brothers, "I'm about to die, but God will visit you and bring you up out of this land to the land which he swore to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob." Then Joseph took an oath of the sons of Israel, saying, "God will visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here." He didn't forget that promise to Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob. He knew that God was a God that could be trusted. And that's what his whole thing was about. Can you imagine lying there in state for nearly 3 centuries? It was 300 years after Joseph died before Moses came and delivered the children of Israel. Can you imagine lying there without any permanent resting place? Wonder why he did it. Because of this one realization. He believed that God was a God that could be trusted and his promises were sure. And you need to do that. God's made a lot of promises to you. And they're all sure, just as sure as you're sitting here today. His throne is as sure as his word is. His word is as sure as his throne is. And so Joseph was a young man who would not forget God. And he made sure that his life was a living monument even after he was dead. He refused to be buried, and he would not allow himself to be forgotten, and he would not allow other people to forget the things that he needed to remember also. He wanted other people to remember about God. And that's why really he said, "I want you to leave me here." I think he wanted to be a memorial. I think he wanted to be a constant reminder to these people that God is, and that this is not your home. Egypt isn't your home. You're going somewhere else. You've got something else that's your destiny. We ought to remember that too. He says God is going to come and visit you. He's going to take you out of this country. He's going to take you to a promised land. And you people need to realize that. You young folks need to realize this isn't our country. This isn't our land. God has something better for you than this. You listen to Joseph and let his bones talk to you, would you? Did you ever hear bones talk? The bones of Joseph talk, and they say, "This isn't your country. And God is going to come and visit you, and he's going to come and take you away. And you'll be with him in a city there that's built, that has foundation, whose builder and maker is God." Well, sure enough, Joseph then, even though he was dead, Joseph lived. Joseph was one who could not be forgotten. He was a man that would not forget God or his family or the promises of God or the dreams of his youth. And he wasn't going to let other people do it. He wasn't going to let them forget it either. So here he was. But there he lies in the coffin. I wonder if they'll remember him when they're getting ready to go. You know how you forget things when you go on a trip? Did you ever go on a trip that you didn't forget something? One of your games, or forget something, you know, your dog or something, you had to go back and get him? Did you ever do that? Well, I've never been on a trip yet, young people, but what I didn't forget something. I forgot something this last trip we went on. Forgot my toothbrush. You get all in a hurry, you know, and in a hustle, and you're so excited about going. I wonder how excited these people were. They had been in Egypt now for 400 years. Don't you know they were excited? Moses was there, had all these signs that had taken place, the 10 plagues, the darkness and the blood and the locusts and all that and the frogs, and the people were all excited about going. This last plague, the one of the death of the firstborn, all of this was saying, "Get ready, we're getting ready to go." And the people were strapping things on their back, and they were getting their shoes on, and they were getting some food to eat, and they were getting all their cattle herded up and everything. I wonder if they're going to remember Joseph. He said, "Don't you forget me now." And I bet somebody said, "Oh, don't forget Joseph. Go get Joseph. He's supposed to go with us. Sure enough, in Exodus, the 13th chapter, it says this, "And Moses took the bones of Joseph with him. For Joseph had solemnly sworn to the people of Israel, saying, 'God will visit you, then you must carry my bones with you from here.'" Sure enough, they didn't forget him. They went down there wherever he was, and they fixed it, whether he was on a cart or what, I don't know. I hope it was on a cart, because they sure weren't prepared for what they had ahead of them. They thought it would take them about 2 or 3 months, you know, to get to Canaan. How long did it take them? 40 years. And they carried that? Oh, they must have dumped him somewhere. They didn't carry him the whole way, surely. No, they carried him the whole way. Because in the book of Joshua, chapter 24 and verse 32, listen to this story as it is brought to a close. "The bones of Joseph, which the people of Israel brought up from Egypt, were buried at Shechem, in the portion of ground which Jacob bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, for 100 pieces of money. It became an inheritance of the descendants of Joseph." So sure enough, they remembered him. They remembered his bones. And they went and got him, and they carried him all the way through that wilderness wandering, and then finally brought him to that resting place that he had so anxiously desired. They brought his bones. They didn't forget them. Here's the sad thing about it, though. Though they remembered to bring his bones, they forgot to take his spirit. And that's the sad footnote of this lesson. They remembered his bones, but they forgot to take his spirit. That great spirit of Joseph that wouldn't let people, you know, bury him in hardship and in injustices. They forgot to take the spirit that remembered God. They forgot to take the spirit that would resist temptation. These people, the Hebrew writer says, and the First Corinthian letter says, these people were overthrown in the wilderness. God wasn't very well pleased with them. With the most of them, God was not pleased because they were overthrown in the wilderness. These people should have remembered to take the spirit of Joseph as well as the bones of Joseph. But this great man, then in his life, let me close with one other statement. In the book of Hebrews, we find the bones of Joseph mentioned again. And there it says, "By faith, Joseph, at the end of his days, made mention of the exodus of the Israelites and gave commandment concerning his bones." There's that reference again. And this young man, 17 years old now when he was sold into Egypt, this great spirit of this great man, this young man was of such prime character and of such sterling character that God, because of this man's faith, God listed him here in the 12th chapter of Hebrews in the honor roll of faith and says that this man by faith saw the coming exodus of the Israelites out of Egypt and said, "You take my bones with you." And he makes reference of it here. So these four times the bones of Joseph are mentioned. What a tribute to this young man that he was a man that refused to be buried. In the 12th chapter of Hebrews, he brings the lesson to you and me. "Therefore, seeing we're compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses," Joseph is one of those witnesses. You know, Joseph is watching you today. That's right. In whatever sense the Hebrew writer meant it, Joseph is looking down on you as you run your race. What kind of a race are you running? Reckon you'll be overcome? Reckon you'll be buried while you're alive? Or not? When people show you preferential treatment, are you going to let that make you a spoiled brat? When people shun you, are you going to let that crush you? When people tempt you and do you an injustice, are you going to let that overwhelm you and bury you? When you come into money or power or whatever it may be, are you going to let that make you just awful? You going to let that happen? Joseph didn't. He said, now he's watching you. He's one of this cloud of witnesses. And now you need to lay aside every weight and the sin that does so easily beset you and run with patience the race that's set before you. He had a race set before him. You've got one set before you. Joseph, the young man who refused to be buried. What will people say when you die? Oh, yeah, what was that fellow's name? Terrible, wasn't he? Will they say that? Well, what was that little boy's name? He was a terror. Or will they say, you know, that young man refused to be buried. While he was living and after he's dead, I'll remember him as long as I live. He was a good boy. He was a boy that was aware of God. It's up to you now, young people. Be like Joseph and be a young man or a young woman who refuses to be buried. And may your bones speak out just as loudly as Joseph speak, and they still speak today. May God bless you as you order your lives in view of the fact that we don't have anything about Jesus from the year of his 17th birthday on through to his 30th birthday. We know what happened to Joseph during those years. Joseph is the most nearly like Christ of any young man in all the Bible. So I would feel free to point you to Joseph during the years of his 17th birthday on through his 30th. He'll bring you to the Lord. He's a good example, and you follow his example, and you can't go wrong. Perhaps you need to respond in some way this morning, either in faith in the same God that Joseph believed in. You need to be baptized upon your confession of your faith in the Son of God, Jesus of Nazareth. Maybe that you need some kind of encouragement. Would you come? We're going to extend the invitation to you now while we stand and sing.
In the